synopsis of the case, confined it with our deputy marshal at my far left, so if you want one. 98-3150, 98-3484, Jerry Teague, excuse me, versus Bad River Band of the Lake Superior Tribe, Chippewa Indians. Arguing for Mr. Teague is Mike Earhart. Attorney Earhart.
May it please the court. My name is Michael Earhart, and with me at council table is Andrew Erlinson. We represent petitioner Jerry Teague. This is a case of first impression. The issues presented are important to the orderly administration of justice in Wisconsin. Thanks to Public Law 280, Wisconsin circuit courts have concurrent jurisdiction, together with Wisconsin tribal courts, over all civil causes of action arising on Indian reservation land. Thanks to Section 806.245 of the Wisconsin statutes, those same Wisconsin circuit courts are required from time to time to function in effect as gatekeepers, charged with the task of determining on a case-by-case basis whether Wisconsin tribal court judgments should be accorded full faith and credit. This case arises from the refusal by a Wisconsin circuit court, fulfilling its statutory role as gatekeeper, to accord full faith and credit to a Wisconsin tribal court judgment that was secured by the respondent, Bad River Band, under circumstances that follow. The litigation in question was initiated by petitioner Teague, and it had already been pending in the Wisconsin Circuit Court for Ashland County for some 15 months when the respondent, Bad River Band, the defendant in the circuit court proceedings, initiated a declaratory judgment action in Wisconsin Tribal Court, an action involving the same parties, but only certain non-dispositive issues. Now, while the Wisconsin Circuit Court deferred to the tribal court with respect to those non-dispositive issues, finding that they went to, as the respondent represented to that court, they went to matters that were organic to the tribe's constitution, Circuit Court deferred, as it should, to those issues, but it denied the respondent's motion for a stay of the circuit court proceedings pending the outcome of the tribal court case, and admonished the respondent and its counsel that the circuit court fully intended to retain jurisdiction over the dispositive issues in the case, which went to contract formation, and as to which a very full and complete body of Wisconsin law was available. Despite this admonition from the circuit court, the respondent and its counsel proceeded to amend the complaint in the tribal court proceeding to include the very dispositive issues, the contract formation issues, that the circuit court had indicated that it intended to retain in the prior pending action. And the respondent did so for the express purpose of manufacturing a res judicata issue preclusive defense so that it could use it in the prior pending Wisconsin Circuit Court proceeding.
Mr. Earhart, let me, yes, if I might interrupt for a minute. I'm somewhat puzzled by why your client participated to some extent in the tribal court proceedings and yet did not appear at the time of the motion for a default judgment. My understanding is your client participated in joint discovery, a discovery that went both to the circuit court matter and the tribal court matter. And yet when the motion for default judgment comes before the tribal court, your client isn't there. What explanation, if any, is there for that?
Your Honor, the explanation is very simple. We considered that the deposition testimony taken in the circuit court proceeding under oath would be readily usable in any other proceeding, whether we considered it appropriate or not. It is true that the plaintiff, that the band's counsel noticed up the depositions in the case for both proceedings. It is true that at the outset of depositions, the band's counsel would state a position that this is for use in both proceedings. But that was superfluous in our view, because sworn testimony under oath in the context of a deposition with the opportunity for cross-examination and defense of counsel would be usable in any proceeding. So we did not consider that we were participating in that sense in the tribal court proceedings. And we were fastidious in not participating in the tribal court proceedings, not because of any disrespect whatsoever for the tribal court or its jurisdiction. We declined respectfully to participate in any way, shape, or form in the tribal court proceedings in reliance, express reliance, upon the admonition by Judge Gallagher in the Ashland County Circuit Court at the time that he denied the Bad River Band's request for a stay of the circuit court proceedings, when he made it absolutely crystal clear, and the record reflects this, that he, that is the circuit court for Ashland County, would continue to assert jurisdiction and adjudicate the dispositive issues, the contract formation issues. And we considered that in light of this declaration by Judge Gallagher, we could rely upon that. It also put the respondent band on notice of Judge Gallagher's views on the subject of the appropriate exercise of jurisdiction in this concurrent jurisdiction scenario.
Why did Judge Gallagher have any authority to tell the Bad River Band court what to do?
Your Honor, Judge Gallagher did not tell the Bad River Band or the tribal court what to do. What he was indicating from the bench was that it was his intention to retain jurisdiction in the prior action pending as to those dispositive issues. What he was signaling very clearly to counsel and to the party over which he did have jurisdiction is that regardless of what happens in the tribal court proceedings, and if it happens to overlap into these dispositive issue areas, mind you, were it to have any issue preclusive effect in my court, in the Circuit Court of Wisconsin, you're first going to have to come to me with an application for full faith and credit status for that judgment.
But it sounds to me, no matter what the words used were, was that he was essentially saying, look, I'm going to keep jurisdiction here, and I intend to take this through to the end, and I don't care what the Bad River Band court does.
Your Honor, what he said was the Bad River Band, the tribal court couldn't tell him what to do, nor could he tell the tribal court what to do.
Then was it okay what the tribal court did?
Within the jurisdiction of the tribal court, that is the reservation land over which it has jurisdiction, the tribal court is free as a sovereign to do anything that it feels is appropriate. But at the point in time where application is made by a litigant in that court to have the Wisconsin Circuit Court evaluate the validity of that judgment under the criteria that are set forth in 806.245, it becomes a different ballgame. We can't tell, that is, a Wisconsin court cannot tell the tribal court what to do. The Wisconsin legislature could not tell a tribal court what to do. But what the Wisconsin legislature did was establish a system whereby, at such time as a litigant in a tribal court proceeding attempted to secure extraterritorial effect of a tribal court judgment, it had to be cognizant of the rules that Wisconsin courts would apply in the public interest of the state of Wisconsin and its citizens. And those criteria are set forth in the statute. So in effect, Judge Gallagher was merely putting the parties on notice that tribal court can do what it will, but litigants can do what they will in that proceeding. But insofar as it would have an impact, issue preclusive or otherwise, on my circuit court proceedings, which are prior pending, the first thing you're going to have to do is satisfy me under Section 806.245 that that action should be accorded full faith and credit.
Let me see. You accept, I gather, that 806.245 is a valid statute.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
You don't have any problem. You accept that a judgment order of an Indian tribal court that meets 806.245, 1 and 2 and 3, entitled to full faith and credit.
If it meets...
And then I'm going to get to 4, but I'm
okay.
Assuming you're not debating 1, 2, and 3 in this case.
Assuming that there is discretion in the circuit court, Your Honor, to consider and analyze these are not mechanical concepts.
Okay, but 806.245 says that the judicial record shall have the same full faith and credit. There's no, you're not debating that,
mm-hmm.
Right?
Not debating that.
It's mandatory.
That's correct. As long as it's a valid judgment.
Right. And 4 says, in determining whether a tribal court judgment is valid, the court, on its own motion or motion of party, may examine the following, okay?
That's correct.
As I understand it, the trial court here had several grounds for denying full faith and credit.
It did, Your Honor.
Okay. And one, as I understand it, was because it had the first case. That is, the first filing was in the circuit court.
In a loose sense, that is what Judge Gallagher concluded.
He then went on, but that was one. It's a race to the courthouse.
It's the inappropriate exercise of jurisdiction, and he relied upon Siver versus Hahn and that rule in concluding that the tribal court's exercise of its concurrent jurisdiction was inappropriate under the circumstances.
Okay. That's not in the statute, though.
It's not in the statute. However, we contend that it certainly can be fairly read into the statute and is totally consistent with the purpose of the statute, which is to promote respect and cooperation as between the Wisconsin tribal courts and the Wisconsin circuit courts. A competition in a race to judgment is counterproductive in that regard, I might add.
Now, can you summarize this case and it's either a race to the courthouse or a race to judgment? Which wins here?
That is a fair way to boil it down to its essentials, Your Honor.
Okay. I'm sure others will come back to that, but I just want to move for a moment to the other grounds. Under 4, we're really dealing with 4C and D here, as I understand this case.
No, Your Honor, we're dealing primarily, I believe, with 4A.
The tribal court had jurisdiction of the subject matter and over the person. Okay, I will accept that. That isn't what, as I understand it, the trial court did not reach the issue of jurisdiction.
Your Honor, that's not quite correct. The trial court, if you'll review the transcript of his ruling from the bench, did speak specifically to jurisdiction. He did not speak in terms of a lack of personal jurisdiction or a lack of subject matter jurisdiction. And for purposes of this argument at this point, assuming there was personal jurisdiction and subject matter jurisdiction, his point was that there had been an inappropriate exercise of concurrent jurisdiction by the tribal court in light of the fact that there was, and the tribal court was fully aware of it, this prior action pending. And applying what he considered to be Wisconsin law, jurisdictional law, to that analysis, he concluded that there may be, technically speaking, concurrent jurisdiction, that cuts both ways. Under the cyber rule, as we would urge be applied here, and it's admittedly not the same as a county vis-a-vis a county under the same judicial system, but he analogized it to that and took the view, which we happen to agree with, of course, that for purposes of determining jurisdiction, it's not just a matter of whether personal jurisdiction existed or subject matter jurisdiction existed, but whether there was an appropriate exercise of that jurisdiction, and under Wisconsin law, he considered there clearly hadn't been.
That goes then to the race to the courthouse.
That does indeed, Your Honor.
Okay.
Which is the law of Wisconsin.
You allege.
Your Honor, that's the law of Wisconsin in terms of our judicial system. If a circuit court in County A has subject matter and personal jurisdiction over the same issues and parties, and a circuit court in County B has the same personal jurisdiction and subject matter jurisdiction over the parties and the same issues, how I read Cyber versus Hahn is that in the end, if it is the first of those courts assume jurisdiction over those parties and those issues, regardless of when the judgment issues. Takes precedence.
The problem with the argument, and you know that, is that we're not dealing with another circuit court. We're dealing with a tribal court, and we're dealing with an entity that is under federal law and other laws viewed as, no matter how you want to phrase it, a sovereign. And or a nation, and that it is not a state, and it's not a circuit court of this state. So you're dealing with an entity that's covered by federal law and state law and its own law.
Absolutely, Your Honor. In fact, it's not analogous to a sister state situation, as suggested by the respondent. They would have this court take the view that they should be on the same footing as a sister state in terms of, and if that were the case, then this statute wouldn't be necessary. We could cover it under the Uniform Enforcement of Foreign Judgments Act. I think the better analogy, the closer analogy, is to that of a foreign country. However, there's a difference even there, because if we're talking about Canada or England and a judgment entered in one of those jurisdictions, where application is made here for full faith and credit, to the extent that it's not covered by treaty, it would be classic comity considerations that would determine whether or not full faith and credit should be accorded. Here, we have this extremely unique situation where, by federal law 280, the circuit courts of this state have concurrent jurisdiction with the tribe court over causes of action arising on tribal land. Two systems of justice with jurisdiction over the same geographic parcel. And in the context of that unique situation, we think it is highly important to note that the Wisconsin legislature limited the scope of 806.245 to Wisconsin tribal court judgments and Wisconsin circuit courts, because it was intending to somehow harmonize, at least to the extent it could on its side of the equation, the relationships, potentially abrasive relationships, between a county, a circuit court, and a tribal court, and it opened the door. The legislation was certainly opened the door as an opportunity for tribal court judgments, Wisconsin tribal court judgments, to receive greater extraterritorial effect within the state. But the Wisconsin legislature enacted that legislation at it, fully knowing what the law was in Wisconsin. The Cyber versus Hahn rule, the prior action pending rule, had been in place for many years before the enactment of that statute, as had been the case law of this court going back many years, which criticized the practice of utilizing a declaratory judgment action as a vehicle by a party disgruntled with what was happening in another forum to, in effect, collaterally attack those proceedings via a declaratory judgment action in a forum that he considered that he might have a better opportunity in.
Mr. Earhart, let me interrupt for a minute, because you're getting to an area, and you've touched it earlier, that I find very interesting. I think you mentioned early on that you felt that 806.245 put the circuit court, the Wisconsin Circuit Court, in a gatekeeper function.
Yes, sir.
If I understand the history of 806.245 correctly, originally that particular statute applied only in regard to the Menominee tribe or the Menominee Nation, and is expanded by the Wisconsin legislature to cover all of the tribes in Wisconsin. When that was done, it's my understanding that the gatekeeper function was changed as well, that there had been basically a requirement that in each and every case where there was a rendering of a judgment by the Menominee tribe, it would be reviewed by the circuit court if there was a request for enforcement, but that those rules were being loosened and changed by the expansion of 806.245. Is that indeed correct?
Your Honor, I view that aspect of legislative history entirely differently. I would note that originally 806.245 was focused upon the Menominee Nation for a reason, and that is because it was generally considered that the Menominee tribe, as among the various Wisconsin tribes, had, if anything, the most sophisticated and highly developed judicial system, with the levels of appellate courts and a body of even of substantive law. And the gatekeeper function in that context would put a lesser burden on a circuit court where it's dealing with a more sophisticated judicial system. We have to understand that there was at the point in time that Public Law 280 was enacted, tribal courts were in a nascent stage at best, generally. I view the fact that the Wisconsin legislature elected to expand the scope of 806.245 to embrace all tribes in the state, all tribal court judgments, only underscored the need for circuit courts, depending upon which judicial system they were dealing with, which judicial system had generated the judgment, for example, to go through these minimum analysis of what passed muster by Wisconsin standards. And what Judge Gallagher, among other things, was concluding was that he found it offensive, but more importantly, violative of the criteria that are set forth in 806.245 for the litigants in the Bad River Tribal Court to have done what they did under the circumstances, and considered that full faith and credit was not appropriate here for the jurisdictional reason, the inappropriate exercise of jurisdiction, and beyond that, I see my time will be up shortly, for the reason that he considered on the facts of this case, and every jurisdictional analysis is fact intensive, but he was there.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
First question, is there any federal law that requires a state like Wisconsin to pass legislation like 806.245?
No, Your Honor. This was done by Wisconsin. I believe some other jurisdictions, but not all, have analogous laws. They differ in some respects. But this Wisconsin law was driven, in our view, by the concern of the legislature, given this potential for these two concurrent jurisdictions to bump up against each other, to develop a way for tribal court judgments, assuming they met Wisconsin criteria, due process criteria, and procedural criteria, and these are all well-established principles, that these could gain extraterritorial currency.
Let me ask a second question. I think the Chief Justice summarized this as, is this a race to the courthouse or a race to judgment? Is there either a state or a federal statute that resolves which of these races ought to win?
Your Honor, we consider that this statute, 806.245, insofar as it was tailored to this particular unique situation, contemplated that Wisconsin courts, in their gatekeeper role, would look to established principles of jurisdictional law in Wisconsin in making that determination. To my knowledge, we have Article 4, Section 1 of the U.S. Constitution, which deals with state vis-a-vis state full faith and credit situations. That's not what we have here. In the absence of this statute, I'd submit we would be dealing with a pure comity analysis. The legislature wanted to give, wanted to set forth its policy in the context of this very unique jurisdictional cauldron, and it wanted to, again, promote the notion of respect and cooperation, and it is antithetical to that purpose to read into this or to suggest that the legislature, cognizant of longstanding rules relating to prior action pending, would exclude that. If they wanted to exclude it, they could have in the legislation.
Thank you. Counsel, you will have 5 minutes in the rebuttal.
Thank you.
Attorney Henry M. Buffalo, Jr., you will introduce and make a motion about Attorney John Jacobson. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor. Madam Chief Justice and Associate Justices of the Court, may it please the Court, my name is Henry Buffalo, and I am here appearing before you today representing the respondent in this case, the Bad River Band of Lake Superior Chippewa. With me at council table is John Jacobson, my partner, and Mr. Kevin Osterbauer, who is the in-house counsel to the band. Mr. Jacobson will be arguing today on behalf of the respondent. I'd like to introduce Mr. Jacobson to the Honorable Court. Mr. Jacobson is a military veteran who served in the Vietnam War and was awarded the Bronze Star as a part of his service. He is a graduate of the University of Chicago Law School and a member in good standing of the State Bar of Minnesota. Both Mr. Jacobson and myself were appointed in 1988 as judges to the tribal court for the Shakopee Sioux tribe in southern Minnesota. I'd like to introduce to you Mr. Jacobson.
Thank you, Attorney Buffalo. Mr. Jacobson, you're admitted for about another hour to the bar of Wisconsin Supreme Court for the sole purpose of arguing this case. Welcome.
Thank you, Chief Justice. It is a privilege and honor. May it please the Court. My name is John Jacobson. I'm with Henry Buffalo and Kevin Osterbauer. We represent Bad River. Bad River, along with the other 10 federally acknowledged Indian tribal governments in this state, is a sovereign. Its sovereignty predates the sovereignty of the Republic in which we are all citizens. And it has survived. It is a legal reality and a practical reality. And this case, and probably many cases to come, this case involves dealing with the relationship between the two governmental powers. In some senses, because the appellant in this matter has chosen simply to ignore the tribal process when personal jurisdiction and subject matter jurisdiction existed. We are here without the benefit of the tribal court's consideration of any arguments that the appellant might have made with respect to its exercise of jurisdiction under the circumstances that it was presented when the Bad River Band filed its complaint. Nonetheless, I submit, this case offers this court an opportunity to give guidance, useful guidance, for litigants, for parties, and for the court systems in this state as to appropriate ways in which they can interrelate.
Mr. Jacobson, let me interrupt you. In that regard, did either of the judges here call the other? Was there any communication between the two judges in regard to the situation of two cases pending, one in each court?
To the best of my knowledge, neither called the other, Justice Crooks. I do recall, and my memory is not what it was, which never was very good, I believe that in the proceedings where the Bad River Band presented the tribal court judgment and asked for full faith and credit, that Judge Gallagher said, maybe I should have called, or words to that effect. But neither judge, I believe, actually ever did call.
Counsel, in that same hearing, one of the bases for Judge Gallagher not giving full faith and credit is a determination that the band procured the judgment through coercion or fraud, which is, I think, the 4D in 806245. Would you address that issue?
Yes, thank you, Justice Bradley. Judge Gallagher did indeed state that, in his view, both fraud and coercion had been applied in the context of the tribal court proceedings. I believe the record speaks for itself in terms of the basis, his view of the basis of those facts. The facts are these. The band told the circuit court that it had filed a complaint in tribal court. And in the process of asking the circuit court to stay its proceedings, to permit the tribal court to consider the matters that were profoundly tribal, the issues involving the charter, the meaning of the tribal charter, the meaning of tribal employment, the logical inferences that could be taken from tribal proceedings and tribal council deliberations and subsequent actions of tribal officials, profoundly tribal issues, asking for a stay of proceedings to permit that. The appellant, for the first time in the proceedings, in any proceedings, suggested that in fact it didn't make a difference whether or not the tribe actually had contracted. Because, nonetheless, the doctrines of estoppel, equitable estoppel, apparent authority would operate, and the so-called contract formation issues would govern the case in any case. At that point, at the very conclusion of that hearing, I offered to the court on the record the observation that we would have to consider whether or not there would be an amendment necessary in the tribal court proceedings to address those issues as well, because for the same reason, they're centrally tribal issues. The circuit court, I submit, was told. I don't know if the law requires the circuit court to be told. I don't know if it would have been committing, I don't think it would have been committing fraud or coercion. If I had lied and said, nope, we're not going to, or we haven't, that's another matter. But disclosure was made, service was accomplished subsequently on the so-called Second Amendment complaint, which that's a misnomer. It was the First Amendment complaint. Our office made a mistake. Service was accepted by appellant's counsel. We proceeded with discovery. No answer was filed. No motion was made. No special appearance was made. Nothing. Not in the record? No, it's not in the record, and therefore I won't touch it. In the record, in the tribal court record, is an affidavit from an associate in my firm recording a telephone call or reflecting a telephone call that he made to appellant's counsel before the default hearing. We served the complaint in February. The default hearing, I believe, was in late July, saying there's going to be a hearing. And the response was, we're not going to show up. We think it would jeopardize our case. We're not going to show up. The same representations were made to the tribal court. That material was filed, the entire tribal court record was filed with the circuit court per 806.245, along with the tribal code certified, along with the certification of the clerk of court saying we do give full faith and credit to state court judgments. I submit as that the Court of Appeals was, in this case, was absolutely correct when they said, this is litigation, it's not fraud or coercion. These are two jurisdictions, both of them have, both two courts, both of them have jurisdiction. This is the kind of thing you have when you have multiple sovereigns. And there is an obligation, if you are litigating, to state, and if there is jurisdiction, to do something.
Question, and opposing counsel talked about the Sivier versus Hahn case and the fact that where one court has complete jurisdiction, other courts will not assume jurisdiction of the matter that can be litigated in the court where the action is pending. Now, I assume you're familiar with Sivier, and I assume that Judge Gallagher was looking at that and saying, well, now look, this was filed 15 months ago, assuming that that is correct, and that I have, quote, jurisdiction. Is your argument basically that you felt that there were other matters, and you mentioned some of them, that had to be litigated, that's why you did not continue, or that's why you feel that there was not, quote, concurrent jurisdiction or complete jurisdiction in the Ashland County Court?
Several points, Justice Wilcox. There is concurrent jurisdiction. In my view, the Siver doctrine, where if one court has obtained complete jurisdiction over a matter in the state of Wisconsin, other Wisconsin state courts are then precluded from taking any piece of that case, has no application, no more application here than it would if I was representing a client in the state of Iowa and had gone to the state of Iowa and filed a complaint basically alleging the same matters. As a footnote, a small footnote, I would observe that actually, on the record, the only pleadings that concern the apparent authority argument in this matter are the ones that are filed in the tribal court. The complaint, there's only one complaint in the state court matter, and it doesn't allege apparent authority. It's not dealt with. It was never amended. So arguably, the only court that had that issue in front of it was the tribal court. But in any case, assuming that both courts had all issues, if I went to Iowa, State versus Kern, or Sheridan versus Sheridan, in this court's jurisprudence would say, you do an analysis. You look at the locus of the case. You look at where the parties are, where the facts occurred, what law is at issue, what public policy is most engaged. You do a balancing. Maybe the courts should call each other up and talk to each other, or maybe, as the Court of Appeals suggested, it would be immensely helpful here. If protocols are worked through, and if this case generates an initiative to develop something of the sort. But as a legal matter, if I went to Iowa, that court takes jurisdiction, renders a judgment, I bring it back here, the full faith and credit clause of the Constitution applies, and That's the end of the matter. And that is what I submit the Wisconsin legislature intended here. The Legislative Council's report on the amendment in 1991 is absolutely straightforward. And it's quoted on page 34 of our brief.
I have but two questions.
Chief Justice.
One, seems to me, and I'm looking at page 30, 31 of the brief, the quote of Professor Leffler. And this is in regard to Sheridan and Kern. Says this is Leffler. The mere pendency of an action in one state has no effect upon the right to bring an action in another. Whichever suit is first carried to judgment then bars the other. But it is only the rendition of judgment that has the effect. Because, of course, we're talking about full faith and credit.
Yes.
Until judgment is rendered, successive suits may be brought in different courts. So it seems to me, my first question is, it seems to me your position is that it's a race to judgment.
Yes.
That whoever gets the judgment first, that judgment must be given full faith and credit by the... where we're only dealing with the state court here, has to be given full faith and credit, and that unless the judgment is invalid for the reasons set forth in subsection 4. Is that your position?
Yes.
In a nutshell.
In a nutshell.
If we take that position, which leads me to the second question, and the other side's just taking the other position, and then you've got, for the moment, the... is it a judgment on the merits? Was the personal subject matter jurisdiction? Was it fraud and coercion, et cetera? But it really boils down to the race, which is my second question. Whichever way this court should go, if we ultimately see that as the issue, there are other issues, if we ultimately see that as the issue, how does a holding in this case foster continuing discussions between the state court system and the tribal court systems, because we have many tribes and they have many courts and developing courts. You may or may not know that we have established a tribal forum in this state. So my question is, Court of Appeals thinks that really this is an issue that needs negotiation, discussion. You seem to feel that way, too.
I do.
What is the appropriate way for this court to proceed in order to get what at least you and the Court of Appeals believe is a better way of dealing with concurrent jurisdiction issues?
It seems to me that the state of Wisconsin has made a wonderful start, and the tribes have made a wonderful start at working...
And the federal judges are involved in this, too.
Yes. At working through frameworks and getting to know one another. As much as anything else, it strikes me, and I will digress only briefly, but... my partner and friend and fellow judge Henry Buffalo alluded to the fact that we've served on a tribal court in Minnesota for quite some time. In Minnesota, which is not as far along in many ways on these matters as Wisconsin is, because there is no rule nor statute, there is now what's called a tribal court and state court committee on which from the state side, there is representation from the Supreme Court, the Court of Appeals, and from each district in the state, and from each of the tribal courts. There are court administrators that have separate meetings to deal with the actual mechanics, which may be in some ways the most difficult aspects of questions when an order comes into one place and someone needs to do something with it. It seems to me, Chief Justice, that Wisconsin has made a wonderful start. I would not presume to make specific suggestions, but I would say this. Yeah, this was going to be my closing.
That was so, a little early, but go ahead.
Well, no, I've got a couple more things to say, but I'll get this in now. if this opportunity is seized to reacknowledge, as the Wisconsin Supreme Court did in a different context, in the County of Vilas versus Chapman matter, and the Court of Appeals of Wisconsin in a number of cases, the St. Germain case, the Jacobs case, have done, that tribal courts and tribes are separate sovereigns, and that the basis for dealing must be one not of imposing all of the requirements and rules of however far that would extend, of Wisconsin state courts to tribal courts, which certainly the framers of Public Law 280 never dreamed would be appropriate, and neither did the Wisconsin legislature, or they would not pass the full faith and credit statute. But rather dealing with the tribes as sovereigns, and using this as the basis for moving forward in that regard, it strikes me that although this litigation has been costly and ultimately has caused heartache, no doubt, on all sides, it may at least produce significant value to the two sets of jurisdictions.
Here's what's bothering me. Go ahead. Just press it.
Mr. Key claims he has a contract. Suppose he had gone into the Bad River Tribal Court and said, I want my contract for it. I want to settle the payment. And then it became clear that things were not going the way he thought they ought to. He said, I want to get out of here. I want to go over to Ashland County Court, Circuit Court. What would you have said?
Well, that's a slightly different hypothetical, because he would have been filing in both cases. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure how that plays. But I think one thing certainly is
hey, pal, you started it here. You haven't exhausted your remedies here.
Well, see, I would have argued several things at various points along the way. The first thing I certainly would not have done is default in the state court proceedings. Then I would have argued there is an action pending, and the locus, if one is going to utilize the kinds of rules that you do when you've got figure out which one should go forward. The locus of the questions, the expertise, the law, the history of the case, all centers in one place. It centers on the reservation. And so, not only because that happened to be the first place that the case was filed, I don't know if that's terribly relevant. The question is, where does the case belong? And another thing I would have said, which was said to the circuit court and was not, there was no agreement there. But I submit that the Supreme Court of the United States, in the National Farmers case, which was a default judgment in tribal court, and in the Iowa Mutual case, has said that when there are issues involving tribal matters, whatever that means, and that's going to, you know, working through that definition is, of course, you know, in the future it's going to be a question, probably. But in this case, there is no question that these are tribal matters. Where that's the case, the obligation of the litigants is to exhaust all tribal remedies, including appellate remedies. And the obligation, I think, now it is true absolutely that the Iowa Mutual case was a federal case arising out of a federal court, but it was a diversity case. And so the courts were sitting in state courts. And the instruction was the same. The instruction was, sit back. If these institutions are going to develop, and that is the national policy, if these institutions are going to develop, how in the world are they going to develop if you don't give them a chance to?
Well, it seems to me that the crux of this case seems to me that when something starts in private court, and then you try to remove it to federal court or try to remove it to state court, the federal court or the state court is bound to recognize, as a matter of comedy, the jurisdiction of the tribal court. But apparently that's not confirmed.
I think that's true.
Well, how does that foster good relations?
Well, how does the imposition of the state, how does treating the tribal court as a court of the state under the Seiber versus Hahn doctrine and imposing the state's rules as to first to file on it, I believe Justice Stevens in one of the two cases, not sure whether it was National Farmers or Iowa Mutual, wrote a dissent saying, this doesn't look to me like normal comity. This looks like stronger comity, and I'm not sure that I agree with that. Well, if you read the text, I think it is stronger comity. In any case, I submit, however, that even if it's regular comity, even if it is just two courts sitting and looking at each other and saying, am I going to go or are you going to go? The rules are, well, all the witnesses are located over there, and the law is all over there. I got the case first, but it looks to me like the case centers on you. I'm going to stay. And if there are pieces or you know body parts come flying out of the case and land over here, I'll decide what to do with them. But meanwhile, you go, you do it.
Dr. Jacobson, but we're talking about Ashland County.
Right.
It's not as though those were 150 miles away. People on the reservation voted for the judge.
Well, actually, Judge Gallagher was sitting by designation from Washburn County, but it is certainly true that it's not as though the case was in Nebraska or but also certainly true that the greater familiarity with the law of the tribe would be with the tribal court, at least presumptively. The greater familiarity with the center of gravity, even though it is in Ashland as opposed to Odena, the center of gravity is in Odena. And I submit as well, it's a significant point, I think. Judge Smart, and the record's all filed. Judge Smart, when he considered the matter, he considered all of the depositions and all of the exhibits were filed, all the discovery was filed, everything was filed. And he looked at it and he weighed it, and I submit that he made a decision consistent with the tribe's code, which says you begin with tribal customs and laws, and if there are no tribal customs and laws, then you apply appropriate federal or state laws. There's no part of that decision that he rendered from the bench and then reduced in findings and conclusions. No part of it that diverges in the least way from the law of the state of Wisconsin on the points of estoppel. It deals precisely with the tribal court issues. And it deals precisely with the facts of the case arising on the reservation. But this isn't any miscarriage of justice. The Weisman versus Wagner or C.R. Stocks, the C.R. Stocks case would come up this exactly the same way. The center of gravity is in Odena, and if the policy, and again, I think I really do believe it is a stronger comity. It's not just comity. I think stronger comity is designed to recognize the sovereignty and let it develop in ways in which it's not imposed from the outside, but rather it's a dialogue. It doesn't solve all the problems. It's not the shining city on the hill, but it is better.
Mr. Jacobson, I'm somewhat surprised because we are interpreting a statute here. And yet the argument, perhaps it's the court's fault in asking questions, The argument is about race to the courthouse, not mentioned in the statute. Race to judgment, that's only indirectly because we have a full faith and credit. We're talking about comedy. I'm not being critical. I'm pointing out a problem I have in dealing with the case. I mean, if we fell into C, D, or A, I mean, it's quite easy. We just do it, but we don't readily. And since there's a concept that we ought to have better processes for dealing with this, I want to know from you, if you can, and if you were writing this decision, what you would write that would satisfy the statute, satisfy the facts and issues here, and at the same time set forth, or at least develop, a process.
I would write that as a matter of undisputed fact, there is subject matter and personal jurisdiction in the tribal court, that as a matter of law, the undisputed facts disclose no coercion or fraud.
No what?
Coercion or fraud in the matter. I would write that the filing requirements in 806.245 were met, that the filing of the record, the filing of the certifications by the tribal officials. And I would write that although the matter has involved much more extensive litigation than would be desirable in a situation where there are two sovereigns with two sets of courts, although it would have been better if the matter had been worked out between the courts, if one had stayed and one had not, which might have very well have been advanced if the appellant had appeared in the tribal court. Nonetheless, there is no defect under 806.245. There is no defect whatever in this judgment, and it is entitled to full faith and credit as the legislature and the legislative council contemplated. But it is apparent that there are not, at this point, protocols formally adopted by either court system. And it behooves both court systems to work to do a better job for the citizens that are subject to the jurisdiction of the courts, the two sets of courts, in the future, so that the time and treasure of litigants is not expended. They have some certainty. They know what to do, where to go, and what the roadmap is. I think 806.245 is absolutely plain on its face.
Grace to the judgment.
Sure. Yes.
It's not a good system.
It's a good system, Your Honor, because it gives the decision to judges. If it is a race to the courthouse, then the judges, once the case has arrived in my court, I've got it. I'm stuck with it. Even if I look at the thing and I say, now, different. If this is a circuit court in Ashland County and a circuit court in Milwaukee, the state has venue provisions to deal with it. You've gotten to state court, but you can maybe move it. I don't know of any way in the world that if I'm in Ashland, I can move the case to Odena if it's not filed there. If it's raced to the courthouse and the thing's properly filed, that's it. The court's decision has been made for it. There is no room, no more room for the sorts of considerations that judges can give. I see my red lights on.
Thank you. Justice Babbage has a question for you.
What if Judge Gallagher here had issued his judgment prior to judgment from the tribal court? What would be the effect of this trial? What would you be arguing today?
It would be a much harder case. We'd be in a pickle. I think I'd argue. I would have appealed at that point, since all the rulings of the court come forward and are appealable at the point of judgment. I would have appealed, I think, on the basis that he committed error in not staying his proceedings.
In not staying?
In not staying, in not granting the motion to stay. But it becomes, it would become a much harder case, because it seems to me at that point, I win only if I'm right about strong comity. Whereas I think at this point, the statute simply controls.
Does the tribe have a full faith and credit?
It does. It does. It routinely grants full faith and credit to state court judgments, child support, and that certification is required by the AO 6.245. It was made by the tribal clerk in this matter. Thank you.
Justice process,
of course.
Is there any deficiency in the jurisdiction of the Circuit Court of Ashland County?
Well, again, the matter of apparent authority was not pleaded in the complaint. Beyond that, we have not appealed that. We have not appealed that court's jurisdictional determination. So the law of this case is that it had jurisdiction.
Thank you, Mr. Jacobson. Mr. Earhart.
Thank you.
I'm going to ask you the same question I asked Mr. Jacobson. How would you write this case?
Your Honor, in our view, when reversing the Court of Appeals, we believe that this court should acknowledge that 806.245-4A contemplates an analysis of the appropriateness of tribal courts' exercise of its concurrent jurisdiction under long-established Wisconsin law, including the rule relating to prior actions pending. That, in a nutshell, is how we would approach the resolution of this. I note from the colloquy between Your Honor and counsel the discussion regarding whether there are protocols and what could encourage the parties. I'm glad you are. Some time has passed, as I understand it, over which period the representatives of the tribal courts and representatives of the Wisconsin judiciary have attempted to work out these sorts of things. In fact, Judge Gallagher, on the occasion of one of these discussions, lamented the fact that while he had, for a period of time, and I don't know that he does currently, had participated on some of those committees, nothing had happened. And I submit that there's really no reason for the tribal courts to agree to a system that would contemplate a race to the courthouse as opposed to a race to judgment. I believe, Your Honor, that regardless of that, the Wisconsin legislature, under our reading of the statute, allows for, contemplated, and this court has the power to read into that statute, and ought to read into that statute, consistent with the intention of the legislature, the prior action pending rule. That will settle the matter, because every party in every litigation with respect to which there exists concurrent jurisdiction will know. Party to tribal court litigation will know that if they have any thoughts of causing that judgment to have extraterritorial effect, they need to play by Wisconsin's rule in that regard, because Wisconsin, after all, is the sovereign that makes the decision with respect to which judgments of foreign sovereigns or other sovereigns, it will accord full faith and credit. And contrary to what has been suggested by the Court of Appeals, I was shocked that the Court of Appeals bought into the notion that the constitutional type full faith and credit contemplated by Article 4, Section 1 overlays the situation here. This is not a state we're talking about. It's not a territory as contemplated by the Constitution. Any entitlement to full faith and credit from Wisconsin is either a function of the statute or of comity, but not of Article 4, Section 1. I was shocked that the Court of Appeals, in reversing, even held that the circuit court had lacked concurrent jurisdiction. It's as if Public Law 280 didn't exist as far as they were concerned. And based upon these kinds of errors by the circuit court, excuse me, by the Court of Appeals, I apologize, it's not surprising that on this foundation of errors, the Court of Appeals effectively deconstructed Section 806.245 such that it stripped the Wisconsin courts effectively of the gatekeeper role that had been entrusted to them. The Court of Appeals basically threw up its hands and said, there's nothing we can do, it's a race to judgment. They didn't look at the law we submit, they didn't understand the law, and that's why we're here. Their race to judgment promotes competition between the state courts and the tribal courts in a race to judgment.
Counsel, why shouldn't we adopt the restatement second complex of law dealing with pendency of foreign action? A state may entertain an action even though an action of the same claim is pending in another state.
Your Honor, that's a constitutional concept. It's driven by Article 4, Section 1 of the U.S. Constitution. We have no choice when an Iowa judgment is presented to us in a case where that court had jurisdiction over the same parties and the same issues, and it's the first to judgment. We have no choice under Article 4, Section 1. It's a function of federalism that's been imposed since 1787. That is not the situation here. The proper analogy is an alien judgment. That is to say, another country, not another state. The tribe insists that it is a sovereign. It is a sovereign, but it is not a state. It is not a territory, and it should, and for all we can't dictate what kind of system it has. In the United States, that is each of the several states, there are fundamental principles of due process, and there's a what you find in this state in terms of procedures, etc., you're going to find in another state. And there's a review ultimately by the U.S. Supreme Court on matters of this type. You don't have that in the case of the tribal court judgments. And what this legislature intended, I am convinced, is that the Wisconsin Circuit Courts, there was an invitation to the tribal courts. And it makes sense in light of this increasing commerce between the tribes and the rest of the state, vendors, contractors, etc., that you have a way that, it's like the Uniform Commercial Code or anything else, you have a way that's somewhat standardized, somewhat predictable to have resolutions, disputes resolved. Mr. Teague specifically contracted to stay out of tribal court. It was the tribal court's legal counsel that drafted the first contract and put in the arbitration clause, which was the grounds for finding a waiver of sovereign immunity. My time is up, but...
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Attorney Earhart. Thank you, Attorney Buffalo. Thank you, Attorney Jacobson, for your argument. That completes the hearing on 98-3150. The court will...